It's Monday, September 26th, and in another state, abortion is on the ballot. We start here.
My body, my choice! My body.
An Arizona judge bans abortion and instantly changes the midterms.
It feels like this law was really forgotten about. It dates back to before Arizona was even a state.
What's next for women and for candidates just 6 weeks out from Election Day? Iranian officials haven't shut down protests, so they shut down the internet.
We're working to get more technology into the hands of Iranians so that they can communicate.
Now the U.S. is trying to get comms back up, and he shot up his school, but he could be getting out of prison.
This predated what any Americans knew about what the future would become in terms of school shootings.
The parole case that has galvanized Kentucky and posed questions for the entire justice system. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Over the weekend, ABC News and The Washington Post put out this big poll about 6 weeks out from the midterms. There were points of concerns for each party. For one, this poll asked voters, who do you think should be the next presidential nominee of your party? Republicans were basically split on Donald Trump, but what was surprising here is that he's still doing better among Republicans than Joe Biden is among Democrats. A clear majority of Democrats now think that President Biden should not be nominated again. Across the board, voters are disappointed with the economy during his term, so this is not great news for Democrats, but there's still reason for Republicans to be nervous.
The court corrected one of the most egregious legal and moral mistakes of the 20th century.
The people have won a victory. The right to life has been vindicated.
After the Supreme Court decision this summer overturning Roe v. Wade, Republicans raced to outdo each other on abortion restrictions. But in this poll, nearly two out of three Americans disapprove of the Supreme Court's ruling. It's not even close. And so, as Republicans press forward with restrictive laws, this poll shows more Americans trust Democrats on reproductive issues. And just to give you a sense of how quickly the political landscape can change, our polling team was calling all these voters last week. Well, on Friday, as they were wrapping up, an Arizona judge made a ruling that effectively outlaws abortion in that state, virtually across the board. We see states every 2 years where voters are choosing between Republicans and Democrats. Well, here, in an increasing number of states, voters are about to decide directly what kind of abortion rights women will have access to. So how does that change the picture? We got some great perspective with us this morning. See, fanned out across the country right now, we have seven midterm embeds. These are ABC News reporters who are covering some of the biggest races up close and personal. In fact, George Stephanopoulos just launched this whole new show about the unique dynamics of the campaign trail called Power Trip. It's up on Hulu, and that is where you will see our next guest. Libby Cathy is our midterms reporter who's embedded in Phoenix, Arizona. That is where she was as this ruling came out. That's where she is now. Libby, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Brad. It's so good to be here.
So first of all, can you just explain this ruling to me? Because we saw some states change their laws right after Roe fell, but this seemed to catch a lot of people way off guard.
Yes. So just to backtrack, there's this law on the books in Arizona dating back to 1864 that bans all abortions and dishes out 2 to 5 years of jail time for those who help with one, except to save a mother's life. And it feels like this law was really forgotten about. It dates back to before Arizona was even a state. But when the Supreme Court overturned Roe with the Dobbs decision in June, the Republican Attorney General here, Mark Brnovich, said he will enforce this law. He will prosecute doctors who try to help women get an abortion, and that abortion is illegal in the state.
I think that there should be exceptions for rape and incest and also to save the case of a mother when it comes to abortion. But that's not what the law says.
So Planned Parenthood sued him, saying this was unconstitutional. This violates privacy rights.
What patients need, what our communities need, is more access to health care and not less access.
And the court had put an injunction in place that providers had hoped would stay. That did not happen.
A Pima County judge lifting an injunction on an abortion ban dating back more than a century before Arizona even became a state.
So on Friday afternoon, a state judge in Arizona reinstated this territorial era near total ban on abortion. And the timing was big too, Brad, because on Saturday, a ban on abortions after 15 weeks was set to go into effect. That was passed earlier this year by the legislature, signed by Republican Governor Doug Ducey.
I think if you would look at the statistics on what is already happening in our country, you'd find that this is very reasonable policy.
And Ducey says this slightly less restrictive ban after 15 weeks is the law of the land.
So it's about to be less restrictive, and all of a sudden it's way, way, way more restrictive than anyone thought.
Right. So and at the same time, the Republican Attorney General Mark Brnovich is saying that this more restrictive law is the law of the land. So you kind of have two conflicting statements here. And this all just happened over the weekend. And I think there's a lot of confusion about it.
Yeah. So as a result of this, what is the current rule in Arizona? Like, what can a pregnant woman do or not do? What can an abortion provider do or not do?
Yeah. So the reality is abortion is illegal in the state of Arizona right now. If women want to get an abortion, they'll need to go to California or go to another state to get one.
We had abortion appointments that were booked up for the rest of the month. And our providers had to make those really difficult, really traumatic phone calls.
Planned Parenthood clinics are still open. They can help point women to other resources and provide contraception. But medical abortions, essentially, you know, medication given to end a pregnancy before 10 weeks, oftentimes before women even know they're pregnant, all of those services have stopped.
As a physician, I know and can fully attest to the fact that abortion is healthcare.
I was at a press conference on Saturday where a doctor said all the chatter among her physicians' Facebook groups among doctors in Arizona is they feel their hands are tied. She used the words moral injury.
My patients do not have the means to access care in other states.
And abortion rights supporters protesting outside the state capitol this weekend, they all say point blank, women and girls will die because of this law.
Because this is going to affect the most vulnerable populations. Abortions are not going to stop.
It will be like going back into a time when women resort to really desperate measures to end a pregnancy, or women die themselves because of pregnancy complications, especially when doctors here can get 2 to 5 years of jail time for helping them.
And just so I'm crystal clear, like no exceptions at all?
Yeah, good point, Brad. There's no exceptions to rape or incest in either of those two abortion bans we just talked about. Both of them do have an exception to save the mother's life. But again, because of that, the prosecution, and I think it scares a lot of people. So a lot of people will be having to go out of the state or just not get an abortion at all. Democrats here say it's one of the more restrictive laws in the country. And Arizona is a very red state, or it has been, but this has the potential to change a lot of things.
Well, that's what I'm wondering next, because like I'm looking at Arizona's House races right now, right? They have 9 House seats. 538's forecast says at this moment, Republicans are expected to win 5 of those 9 House seats. So like bare majority. Could something like this change the landscape of the midterms in a place like Arizona?
Oh, yes, Brad. This has the potential to be a big game changer. One Republican consultant told me that all the polling we've seen in Arizona that you've just mentioned here, it can be thrown out of the window.
Wow.
You have a Democratic candidate for Attorney General here, Chris Mays.
I will never prosecute a woman, a doctor, a nurse, a pharmacist under that 1901 law, Mike, under the personhood law, or under the 15-week ban.
She thinks all these bans are unconstitutional. You have Democrat Katie Hobbs. She's running for governor.
So what my focus on day one is going to be is to repeal this 1901 law. And if we can't do that in the legislature, we're going to go to the ballot box to do it.
She's been trying to get abortion at the forefront of the race for governor against Carrie Lake. Lake is proudly against abortion.
The Supreme Court simply sent the abortion issue back to the states. We have laws on the books right now, and we're going to follow the laws that are on the books.
And so this ruling may very well help them here in a few weeks when ballots go out. I mean, Republicans want to be talking about inflation and immigration and crime, but now they're going to have to address this.
Well, I don't think I quite understood this until now, that like normally you're voting because you think someone might affect abortion rights in your state, say it really matters to you. Here, you've got the Democrats saying, I will not enforce this law. You got the Republicans saying, I will enforce this law. Hence, whoever votes for the attorney general or maybe the governor, you are deciding directly how abortion rights are about to be treated.
Exactly. And that's what Democrats and their supporters are at least saying. And that's what they're trying to drive home with voters. The Republicans say they'd enforce these bans. The Democrats say they wouldn't. And to that matter, too, in the Senate race, you've got Blake Masters and Mark Kelly. And you've got Democrats there saying that Blake Masters would support a total ban on abortion at a national level. Mm. So these are all issues that are being resurfaced because of this ruling. And while it's not like Kansas, where there's a literal initiative on the issue of abortion, Democrats and their supporters here say abortion is certainly on the ballot in Arizona.
Right, because the question is now, do you get an entirely different set of voters that show up? Are there people who wouldn't care about R versus D, but now when it's abortion versus no abortion, do show up to the polls? We'll see. Libby Cathy will be right there. You can also check her out on Power Trip, airing right now with George Stephanopoulos on Hulu. Thanks, Libby.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, shutting down phone lines just doesn't suppress protesters like it used to. We're back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night in London, there was this scary moment outside the Iranian embassy where protesters started surging toward the embassy and then started throwing rocks at the British police defending the building. And as chaotic as that was, it is nothing compared to the protests in Iran itself, which have now started raging in more than 80 cities, according to local reports. This all stemmed from the death of a 22-year-old woman arrested for allegedly not wearing her hijab carefully enough to cover her hair, who then died in police custody. Police are now dealing with a furious nation there. Let's go to ABC's foreign correspondent, Lama Hassan, who is at our London bureau right now. Lama, we heard about how these protests began, but it seems like they have really continued to grow, not just in Tehran, but elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely. We've seen pictures coming in this weekend of thousands of not only men, but also women and of all ages. They've been coming out in force on the streets, and we understand that they've been coming out for 9 days, nine consecutive days, to show the security forces that they're not scared of them. We saw video of protesters staring down security forces. They were chasing away a riot police van. And this, which is really brazen and brave of these protesters to do in Iran, we saw video of protesters tearing down a picture of the supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. They were trying to tear down his picture, and they were also, while doing that, chanting death to the dictator, which is something unheard of and really dangerous in the country. So these protests that have been going on for 9 days now are just getting bigger, and the security forces are finding it difficult to push them back. In other countries as well, we've seen women in solidarity, you know, take part in protests. Same thing, take off their headscarves, wave it in the air, stand on cars, waving their headscarf in the air. Such a powerful image. And we've seen that in Iran, outside the White House, Berlin, Greece, in London, there were demonstrations outside the Iranian embassy. It's a powerful image that they're sort of shedding this. They're showing the police, the morality police, that they just don't care. And this is in solidarity.
I contacted her family, the family of the deceased, at the very first opportunity.
And we heard from the Iranian president, who talked about trying to deal with these protests. He said he vowed that he would be dealing with these protests decisively.
Yeah, I was going to say, what has been sort of the response from the regime so far, and what, I guess, measures have they taken to quell the demonstrations?
It's a two-pronged approach. that the Iranian government is taking here. One is on the streets with Iranian security forces, with clashes breaking out, with trying to quell these protests physically, but also online. The government has been enforcing a social media blackout by trying to block messaging apps so that people can stop messaging each other, to try to mobilize together, to try to stop them from meeting up and posting videos for the rest of the world to see.
We're working to get more technology into the hands of Iranians so that they can communicate with one another and the outside world.
We have heard from the U.S. The U.S. has weighed in on this. We heard from Secretary Antony Blinken, who said that the U.S. will ease internet restrictions in Iran so that they can get access to social media and other tools and be able to use them and to be able to post these videos so that we and the rest of the world can see what's happening in Iran. Now, I've covered many revolutions, the Arab Spring, and this is a tactic that the governments use to try to stop these protests from getting bigger and from taking place. This is something that they try to do, although in this respect, I'm not quite sure if it's going to work, because I really do think that this might be a turning point for the country.
Right. And what seems so important and so different about these protests is that precisely it's not just about economic policy or about the simple matter of getting food on the table. This is a fundamental tenet of this regime, that women should act in a certain way. And now you've got mass demonstrations from women and from men saying that order, the order of the Ayatollah, is wrong and we're not going to abide by it anymore. Lama Hassan in London, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
When you zoom out to look at American history, mass shootings are not necessarily a new phenomenon. They've been happening more or less since guns were invented, perhaps in smaller numbers. But what is relatively recent in this country's history is the concept of mass shootings at a school.
I'm going to be an active shooter now at Park Rose High School. Need more cars.
There is a child down. Have fire rescue. Stage in the area.
Since the shooting at Columbine rocked the nation more than two decades ago, we have seen more and more of these types of killings. And because it's a relatively new concept, it's rare that one of these murderers, someone who killed multiple students in what should be the safest of spaces, is released from prison.
Michael Carneal, inmate number 151127.
That could happen based on a hearing happening today, as a killer could be paroled. This is all taking place in Kentucky, and that is where ABC's Trevor Ault went to report this out. Because, Trevor, this is a shooting that actually predated Columbine, right? So it's not like a short prison sentence. It's been more than a couple decades already.
That's right. It's been 25 years, Brad. This thing goes all the way back to December 1st, 1997, a full 16 months before the massacre at Columbine. And at that time, Michael Carneal was 14 years old. He was a freshman at Heath High School. And on that day, he arrived at school with multiple weapons, and he went up to a student prayer group before the school day had even started. He pulled out a handgun, and he fired off 10 shots. And in doing so, he killed three of his fellow students. He injured five more.
I think gunfire.
Where's the shots fired? Where?
In the lobby.
Where? In the lobby of the
high
school?
In the lobby of the high school.
This predated what any Americans knew about what the future would become in terms of school shootings. This was, according to many people, the beginning of this phenomenon that now we are talking about year after year.
Turn off the safety and cocked it, and then just started firing.
Now, he was quickly convicted in the shooting. He was charged as an adult, sentenced to life in prison, but he was given the possibility of parole after 25 years. And 25 years later, here we are. Today, the Kentucky Parole Board will be hearing his case to decide whether or not he can be released from prison, whether or not he can remain eligible for parole at a later date, or whether that chance at parole goes away for the rest of his life.
Well, and last week he actually went before like a smaller part of the parole board. They couldn't quite unanimously decide what to do with him. So now he's here. What are the conversations like in Kentucky? Because I got to imagine at least one person has come up to you and said, like, please don't let this person out of jail.
Well, that's what's interesting, Brad, is so yes, a lot of people in Kentucky are saying absolutely not. You know, this shooting ripped apart our community. This was irreparable damage. But this has been 25 years, so there's also a lot of people there that said, what school shooting?
Wow.
They don't even remember that this happened, or they didn't live there when it did. But yeah, we did. In kind of an unprecedented hearing, we got to hear from this school shooter.
I've had 25 years to prepare for today, and it still doesn't seem like it's happening.
Michael Carneal went before two members of the parole board last week, stated his case, stated what his plans would be if he were to be released, and we also heard from many of his victims, too. They testified the day before of what they thought should happen.
He has never shown remorse or taken responsibility for what he's done. I believe the murderer should never be let out of prison and should serve the remainder of his life sentence.
A lot of them, of course, think he should be locked away for the rest of his life. One woman, Missy Jenkins Smith.
I could speak for hours about what my life has been like every minute of every day.
She went over Zoom to testify, but unlike everyone else, she made sure she sat far away from the camera, Brad. And the reason she did that is because she's in a wheelchair.
The last quarter century without the use of my legs.
She was paralyzed from the shooting, and she wanted everyone to see what she has to deal with every day and will continue to have to deal with for the rest of her life.
I'm forced to continue with every day getting harder and harder as the years pass during my life sentence.
And so she wants to continue to see the consequences for Michael Carneal for the rest of his life. But we also heard from another shooting victim, a man named Holland Holm.
I can't weigh the sum total of his life by the worst actions of his life on the worst day of my life.
Who said this was a child who committed this heinous act. Yes, it was heinous, but now two-thirds of his life, Michael Carneal has spent in prison. Basically, he spent far more time in prison than he ever did as a child running free before this crime happened. And he specifically referenced his own child, this victim.
And I can't imagine holding her to the standard of an adult.
He talked about his 10-year-old daughter, and he was thinking about whether she would understand the consequences of these permanent actions, and he didn't believe she did. And he thinks that Michael Carneal deserves a shot. And of course, the cloud hanging over all of this, Brad, is mental illness.
There's no justification or excuse for what I did. I'm offering an explanation.
When he talks about the day of the shooting, he talks about regret over and over again. He talks about how sorry he was. He says he understands that the public views him as a monster. But in these 25 years, he's received multiple mental health diagnoses. He's been diagnosed, among other things, with paranoid schizophrenia. And while there is medication, which he is taking, there is no cure. And so that's something that's also hanging over these parole hearings, too. He says that the voices have not gone away. In fact, he told the member of the parole board he had heard voices as recently as 2 days before. He said they told him to throw himself down the stairs.
Wait, just a few days ago?
Yeah, absolutely. 2 days prior. I mean, this is, he didn't try to act like this is something that is in his past.
And I'm able to not do it and rationalize that it's not something that I should do, and what I'm hearing is not real.
Because that's not how schizophrenia works, Brad. It is a lifelong disease when you have it. But therein lies the whole issue here, too. There's a very strong case to be made that the person who committed this crime was and is very sick. And so he doesn't necessarily belong in prison. He may belong in a hospital, but he doesn't deserve to be locked up.
The community and the families don't deserve to be sentenced even harsher to living in fear. This shooter needs to stay where he is.
You also have the question of public safety, and a person who's already committed maybe the worst act imaginable could possibly go out on the street. And that's what the State Parole Board of Kentucky is having to weigh here today.
Right. And since you mentioned paranoid schizophrenia, we should say experts say people with mental illness are actually more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators. But even that conversation aside, we're about to be confronting questions about mass shooters coming out of prison more and more, since so many more mass shooters have gone behind bars in recent years. Trevor Ault, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brett.
All right, one more quick break. When we come back, you don't know the power of the dark side or the power of sound editing equipment. One last thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. It's one of the few voices you would still recognize in a galaxy far, far away.
I am your father.
That's right, the voice that has been used in genealogy discussions more than anyone besides Maury Povich. James Earl Jones has signaled he's ready to step away from playing the voice of Darth Vader.
Join me, and together we can rule the galaxy as father and son.
However, as we all know, just because you're done with Darth Vader doesn't mean he's done with you. In recent Star Wars projects, Lucasfilms, which is owned by our parent company, Disney, apparently partnered with a sound studio called ReSpeecher to adjust the voices of its most recognizable characters.
I've accepted the truth that you were once Anakin Skywalker, my father.
The voice you just heard there, of course, is Luke Skywalker, played by Mark Hamill back in 1977. Well, fast forward almost half a century, and Mark Hamill's natural voice sounds, you know, older.
Between the time after you make the movie and before it comes out, they don't want you just say anything.
Right, yeah.
And I'm good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, recently he has been digitally de-aged in new Star Wars shows. And this company's job is to vocally de-age him, make him sound younger.
Really? That's all you got? Feel the Force flow through you.
They've been doing the same thing with James Earl Jones's voice. But what's new here is that Jones recently came to an agreement to give his voice over to this company's artificial intelligence system, meaning they've got his blessing to deepfake the Darth Vader voice without the 91-year-old actor coming into the studio.
Have you come to destroy me, Obi-Wan?
For the most distinct voice in the biz, it signals the end of an era, but in parts of Hollywood, there is a new hope in which you can get new lines, new scenes, new movies with all the force of the old actors. Really interesting part of that story, by the way, that sound studio is located in Lviv, Ukraine. That's right, they were doing these very fine technical effects on these shows with a war raging right outside their headphones. Hey, if you're enjoying the sounds of this podcast, let us know. Leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening. It's like our version of the Ewoks Yub Nub song, right? Just makes everyone feel good. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.